Good morning. It's a great pleasure to be with you this morning. The questions which come to mind when a densely populated city like Shanghai is observed, how do such diverse populations live together? How do they use the city? How do they share space? How much pacified is such a city? How is social control exerted? It is important for us outsiders to understand, in view of its traditions, what Shanghai has currently to teach us for the future. How much a surveillance society based on neighborhood networks has evolved into another type of more privatized, more dual society with yet one of the lowest crime rates in the world. For more than half a century, controlled by residents has been a countrywide practice in Chinese cities. The site of control lied with the family, the neighborhood committees, and the workplace. The role exerted by neighborhood committees under the control of the Communist Party is very instructive for us, Westerners trying to understand again how pacified cities like that can be. The neighborhood committees link families to the leadership of the work unit, Danwei, to street officers, local police, police courts, all functioning like a coordinating body. Shanghai is somehow special. It has fewer work unit neighborhoods in the inner city areas, which are found in further districts. Unarmed community policemen are comparatively more numerous in Shanghai than in other Chinese cities. Yet, because the population is educated about exemplary norms, in principle, institutional agents do not have to be numerous. Families living in large collective housing are distributed according to gates, as you see on the map. A typical five-story building has four gates, and it includes 10 to 15 families, which as a unit are the gates. The various gates represent about 60 households, and the residential committees then covers about 500 families. At each gate, a leader is chosen by the residents or assigned. He or she is often a party member or an official, and he or she deals with the problems of the residential space. The residential committee receives guidance from the street office of the government of Shanghai, which includes the police station, people's courts, and other branches. Members of the committee are also perceived as police aides by the population, and they wear a badge or an armband. The physical pattern of such housing facilities provides an efficient setting for mutual collective surveillance and problem solving. However, not surprisingly, massive urbanization and modernization have put such grassroots mechanisms under stress. The neighborhood's cohesion is in decline due to demographic mutations, demolitions, and renewal. Culturally, residents show less interest in neighborhood involvement, watches. For the wealthiest in central districts, gated communities solve security problems. They go bowling alone. And for the middle classes, management companies deal with their security. The proliferation of video surveillance cameras, 200,000 in Shanghai and 200,000 more to come, is beginning to become problematic. Another contradiction relates to the presence of unregistered farmer-to-worker migrants, a term that will be deconstructed later on. They are part of the fabric of the city, yet they are invisible, they do not have citizenship, and they add to the fragmentation of the city. A survey shows, very unique survey done by Australian researchers, shows that urbanized attitudes to migrants influence their perceptions of public security. You will see later on figures about crime in Shanghai, but I have been able to get the figures for Chinese cities in general. Although, again, it's crime is here associated with robberies, you can see that it is rising, despite the fact that it is still very low. So finally, the challenging questions that I hope we can answer this morning are the following. Are Shanghai elites really eager to produce an inclusive togetherness in their city? What new identity formation springs from rapidly changing spaces? What is the meaning of community, of neighborliness in a fluid society like this? Will invisible interstitial subjects long cope with the absence of citizenship? Will their children do? And if not, will forces of intimidation be necessary to make them comply? We all know by experience that it is more advantageous to govern by consent than by coercion. I will just finish with one anecdote. 2 years ago, there was a great exhibition in Paris called What Happens by Paul Viriot. This exhibition actually was about catastrophes that happen in cities. So I was going through that exhibition and I noticed that there was a room that was extremely crowded. It was the only room that talked about joy, and it portrayed the fireworks over Shanghai for the millennium, and people could never get enough of it. I'm sure that in moments like this, there is togetherness in the city. Let's hope that it is not every millennium. I look forward to the coming presentations to answer the questions this morning. Thank you.